This is Super League Review on Radio Yorkshire.
Well, we really should call it Rugby League Review now because we're all things Rugby League, including the Championship. You can hear the background noise there because tonight we are live at the Rapid Solicitors Stadium. Richard Shawright, you enjoying yourself down there?
They've just started painting a new sign on the outside. It says, "Welcome to the home of Wakefield Trinity Wildcats, Super League's entertainers," it says on the marquee these days.
Does it?
No, I just made that bit up, but it'd be nice if it did.
Ah, right, OK. Have they got a picture of Scoy that you can throw bricks at on the wall on the way in?
Not yet, but I understand a few people on Facebook would like that to be arranged, but I think they enjoyed the commentary yesterday, especially the result.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they did. 2-2, Scoy Wakefield, they're off to a flyer.
Absolutely, and a full credit to him. As I say, the first result down at the Jungle last week just showed the character. It just showed the spirit, what the Wildcats have got this season. You know, for 65 minutes it was all Cast Tigers, but then Tim Smith decided to get involved. Tim Smith decided to move the ball, and then what, within 15 minutes it were from 22-6 to 24-22. Great character spirit. And then yesterday again, Tim Smith at the fore, but a great game from Jacob Munn, who's had his best game since he came to England. Chris Riley there, the forwards, you know, did all the job for us. So yeah, without a doubt, a great start for the Wildcats, but don't get too carried away, Richard, okay?
I've seen many a fall storm before, and I'm not getting carried away anyway.
Hey, Richard, I'll tell you what as well. The Wakefield fans, quite clearly yesterday, because we're having a bit of banter, and I was in the souvenir shop after and coming out of the car park.
Hold on, you were looking for something else for free?
No, well, there's some works in there, doesn't it? So I was just saying hello, and I had a bit of banter with the fans, and they want me to be the motivational person down there, because quite clearly, they're telling me he's doing a great job. But, no, full credit to him, and the good thing about it, everybody's got a smile on their face down there, not just to the players, of course, staff, but also to the chairman himself, in Michael Carter.
Good stuff. Rich, what's the crowd looking like tonight? Obviously, Feather had to move this game. Their pitch not ready for action. Hunslet, have they travelled in good numbers?
Yeah, seen plenty of Hunslet fans. I was in Leeds this afternoon, and plenty of green and orange shirts on the buses coming from the city of Leeds here to Wakefield this evening. And there's a fair few behind the goal at the moment in the north stand and the main stand where I'm sat. It's starting to fill up as well. The western terrace is empty, but everywhere else is it's getting pretty busy here. It should be a decent crowd, it looks like, tonight for what could be an exciting Championship match, especially after the weekend we've had. It should be a cracker.
Yeah, it should be. Lively start to the Championship. We'll get more of that in a few moments' time as well. Rich, we'll come back to you nearer to kick-off, about 10 minutes or so. We'll be back with Richard at Rapid Solicitors Stadium. Phil Kaplan, good evening to you, my friend.
Did he say green and orange?
Yeah.
He'll get lynched.
Why?
Harry Jepson. Myrtle
and flame.
Ah, well, there you go. Green and orange to the uninitiated.
They'll be lucky to get out alive.
The Hunslet Mafia will be after him.
I'm from Hunslet Belial. Oh, they will go ballistic, don't you? You know, heritage and history.
Yeah.
You're laughing there, Wilson. You're laughing there, aren't you? Hey?
I'm laughing as much as you. Another freebie in the post this week for you, Schofield. I see you wearing it tonight. Your Czech Republic rugby shirt.
Czech Republic T-shirt. And Phil, who's, I'm led to believe, a great ambassador of European Rugby League. The Czech Republic have got, I'm led to believe, a rugby festival coming up shortly. And Phil's going to put in a good word that I'd like to go over there and do the presentation for him. So a couple of days in Prague, it will be quite nice, Mark.
Yeah, nice. Yeah,
so if Phil does the job right, we'll be having a couple of quiet ones over there, hopefully.
Yeah. Does he know we can do an outside broadcast as well?
You better ask him.
Welcome to Radio Prague.
Yeah, we've all got our price.
But to be honest with you, and I say I got two T-shirts set through from the Czech Rugby League, and if I'm honest with you, how they got my address, how it's got to me, I don't really know. Obviously, I've met somebody, whether it's been at the Challenge Cup final or the Grand Final or Headingley or wherever, and quite clearly, I might have had a couple of quiet ones and given my address. And anyway, great for them. They sent me two tickets, and as you can see, I'm proudly wearing it here tonight.
Yeah, good stuff. Phil, good rugby league weekend?
I think so. I think the season's kicked off quite well. Every team in Super League now has played a home game, which is good. Crowds are okay. I mean, they're not hugely stratospheric, and as they'd have you believe after the first press release of the season, where we weren't quite comparing like with like. The first week's games in 2015 weren't that dissimilar to the first week's games in terms of attendances in 2014. But for the fact that what this week probably reinforced was that a good team is still a good team, and that the sides at the top of the league tend to be those that historically have the best youngsters and that have been giving themselves the chance of building something rather than trying to buy something. Wakefield are this year's Castleford at the moment, which is great, but we're only 2 weeks in. And everybody has got something they can build on except probably Salford.
OK. Matt, you've seen both the Humberside teams in action this weekend.
Yeah.
Hull beaten by Warrington narrowly. What were they like on Friday night?
Hull were magnificent on Friday night. Even Lee Radford in his press conference, although they'd been defeated, he was proud of the effort that his team had put in. And last year, Hull would have been walloped by 20, 24 points against the Warrington side, which played really, really well on attack, through the kitchen sink at Hull, but their defence was absolutely magnificent, was Hull's, as was Warrington's. I mean, Gareth O'Brien pulled a tackle off on Jordan Thompson late doors, which saved the game for Warrington. Hull could have won that game, and if Hull had won that game, it could have been a fair result, but defences were on top. It was good old-fashioned rugby league, two sets of forwards bashing each other up, and Warrington, just with that Gareth O'Brien drop goal, it ultimately proved to be the difference.
I mean, Hull didn't have any problems last year in defence. They were ranked higher than their final position would have said, but it was in scoring points that was the issue. Was there any hint that they're going to have to do a bit more with the ball?
They're still going to have to do a little bit more with the ball, but they've got a lot more movement now. They've got Snead and Price, and Snead will go across the front of the defensive line and he'll be looking for people to drop off him. And Leon Price is Leon Price. He's doing the same things now he was doing at St Helens 10 years ago, going out to the right. Sometimes he'll put the step on and try and take the line on, and sometimes he'll look for the fullback linking into the line.
I appear to score. You're trying to watch the TV. I've broken it. I don't know what I've done to it. It's just gone off. I think someone's nicked our Sky dish.
Well, I think what you've done, you press the off button. Well, just press the on button. It'll come back on.
It don't work, pal. I'm hoping Danny's listening in the other room. He's going to come in and mend it.
No, just to be honest with you, I know we're just talking about Hull there, but there's just a statement there from Marwan Kukas. He's not going to walk away from Salford. And Yestin Harris's job is not in any doubt whatsoever. Well, I guess the point of view is, you know, Tim Sheens allegedly has been brought in for 3 or 4 weeks on a consultancy role. So the question will Yestin be happy with that? And will Tim Sheens be offered the coaching job on a full-time basis?
Is he going to have the choice to be happy with it? It's like
No, there won't be any choice there. It's a matter of Marwin's done exactly, it's his club, exactly what he's done previously. He's brought somebody in over Yestin's head and trying to sort the mess out what it is at the moment.
John's trying to sort the mess out that he's at the minute. I have broken the telly, it's just not working. Phil, yes, scenario. We were going to talk about Salford later on, but, you know, let's be fair, an embarrassing performance on Thursday night against St Helens.
Difficult performance, but I do think that there are a couple of mitigating reasons why. Obviously, it's a new team again. They are going to need time to knit together. Part of the problem that he's got is that some of the pivotal players that he needs to play and play well weren't there. You know, Michael Dobson is obviously not fit and is now injured. Kevin Locke, I'm honestly not sure why he played, because he didn't look fit from the minute he ran out, and a lot revolves around him. Corey Patterson, again, was the big enforcer against Warrington. He went off injured. So you've got all that to cope with. I think the other thing that has been proven this week with a couple of results is that there are teams who are sort of mid-table to lower table sides who can't put together the intensity of two big games one after the other. So again, Salford on a short turnaround had to play against St Helens, who were in red hot form and trying to peak for a World Club challenge. So their training will have been slightly different at the start of the season, having played in a really intense physical battle against Warrington not long before, and I don't think they'd physically recovered from that battle. And we saw the same a little bit with Widnes, that put up a heroic performance to get a draw with Wigan, and after an hour of a game of equal intensity against Leeds, they couldn't keep that going, and in the last 20 minutes were completely blown away. And I think, again, to expect from the fixtures that Salford had at the beginning of the season, that were Warrington away followed by St Helens at home within 5 days, that there would be anything other than where they are, it is not beyond the realms of possibility. I think the problem was the seeming capitulation in the second half. But when you haven't got your pivots, that's likely to happen. And again, the trouble is if we're focusing too much on how inept Salford were towards the end, we're ruling out how good St Helens were, and I think we not enough people paid credit to that. There were some great St Helens performances.
Yeah, I think the answer to that at times I felt as though we sent St Helens with that performance, it was made a lot easier by, I've said it again, the disgraceful performance by the Salford players on Thursday night, and at times, you know, I would say, Phil, six of the tries out of the ten, me and you could have scored. They were that easy.
They were that easy, honestly,
and they were that soft. So a question I'd like to, you know, to put to you, Phil, and even to you, Matt, as well. Yestin Harris has got a huge problem. We're talking about the pivots there. Quite clearly, the pivots aren't happy the way they're playing. So they have got a huge problem, and the question to you is, quite clearly, can they play the Wigan formula? I don't think they can.
Well, they're trying to play the Wigan formula with some players who were released by Wigan, so they're obviously not as good as the current Wigan squad trying to play.
But the question I'm asking, certainly in one player's point of view, is Rangi Chase. Can he play to a structure? I don't think he can.
I think there's another issue, and you look at Hull KR and you look at Salford, and with the greatest respect to the players they've got playing in the position at the moment, they haven't got a hooker. They haven't got a renowned hooker. And everything starts...
Salford? Yeah. Tommy Lee, he's been hooking all his career.
Yeah,
not a very good one, by the way, but he's been a hooker,
well,
hasn't he?
But that's my point, that unless you've got a hooker that can dominate. I mean, Leeds had the luxury of leaving out Rob Burrow this week by selection choice. He would have walked into those Salford and
but anyway, yeah, with Salford, you know, could Salford play to the Wigan structure? Because if they keep doing as they are doing, Yestin's going to get the sack. There's no two ways about it.
Doesn't it all start with the guy who has his hands on the ball more than any other, which is the hooker?
I've seen Salford twice this season now. I've seen them on the telly and I've seen them live. And the one thing that struck me about Salford is too many Chiefs, not enough Indians. You've got Rangi who wants to play one out from the ruck. You've got Michael Dobson who wants to play one out from the ruck. Theo Farge, he wants to play one out from the ruck. And they just need to be a little bit more organised. I can see the point coming from the hooker. Tommy Lee probably wouldn't get in many other sides in the competition. On the flip side, he said Rob Burrow would probably walk into any side in the competition. Tommy Lee won't. And they've tried playing Theo at 9 on Thursday night, and that didn't work. Last year it did, but the structure that Salford are playing, it is like watching a Wigan under Michael Maguire 2 years ago, and they're trying to play exactly the same way, but the difference is Wigan had the quality of player who can play that structure, but Salford don't quite have it. They've got Gareth Hawk and Harrison Hansen. Well, the only two players who played under that structure. Nobody else has played it.
They've also got Junior Sow to come back in, who was arguably their best three-quarter last year. So it's not all doom and gloom there. I think the problem is who decided Kevin Locke should play. I mean, he may well have said, I'm fit, but to those of us on the outside looking in, he never was fit. And when you strike player who you've built so much around and could be your X-factor player really isn't there from the beginning, what do you do?
But Niall Evald's performance at Warrington justified him keeping his place
on
Thursday
night. So who decided Kevin Locke was going to play?
The interesting thing when I was at Warrington before the game was the good doctor and Yestin deep in conversation for a good 5-10 minutes on the pitch not long after the team had turned up. Very deep in conversation.
I mean, does it need Tim Sheens to come in and tell them what's wrong?
Well, I'll
I'm
tell you
not
what.
So sure it does, guys.
No, it doesn't. No, I'm not. No,
I mean, that's the thing.
At the end of the day, is it coming realistically? Is this a smokescreen? Is coming for a 3-week basis to have a look at the structure of the club itself, and then he gets announced as the head coach, and Yestin takes a backward seat, or does he get short of rest Yestin altogether? But also, Phil, you know, yesterday, as we all know, the quality player he was as an individual player, surely he can see what Rangi Chase is. Mm-hmm. Rangi Chase won the Man of Steel, as we know, with individual performances, you know, for Cass Tigers and this sort of thing. That's what Rangi is. So why, well, I can't fathom out one little bit, because I know myself as a player who liked to go for interceptions, who liked to chip over the top and frustrate coaches. You know, and when coaches said to me, you don't do this, you don't do that, you've got to play what you see, and that's what Rangi does. Why would Yestin want to take that away from I would say, the best talented player in the game?
Did Chase not have that problem when he played for England? That he didn't work for
England? Well, he shouldn't have been picked for England in the first place, so that's not a debate. That's not a debate,
I've got to ask the question.
No, he shouldn't have been anyway, so that's not a debate.
Is the answer to play Michael Dobson at hooker and allow him to...
Well, will Dobson be happy playing hooker, you know?
Well, if you're in a team that's losing by 50-odd points, what choice are you? The other thing I would say is there was a lot of stuff on social networking after that game, which you can do anything you like with a photo, about Scott Taylor. and his physical condition. Now, we're at the start of the season where every club going into the new campaign was saying we've trained better and harder and longer and more productively than ever before. The good doctor was saying his team had been up to army camps and conditioning wasn't an issue. Scott Taylor didn't look in that picture, which was an unflattering picture.
I've not seen it.
That would be a worry for me.
I saw the motion live on Sky, because wasn't it when he went to charge somebody kicking down, yes, and then he had a second go?
Would you not be worried about that?
I thought it was you on the pitch, Willow, to be honest with you. But anyway.
I'm impressed those Czech boys knew what size teeth you were. That's what I'm impressed with. Richard Shaw Wright, he's wakey tonight. The great doctor came on and promised us he wouldn't sack Dr. Kukas. Rich, what's your thoughts?
Well, I don't think he'll sack himself. That'd be quite entertaining. But the pressure's going to build and build and build. And the main thing is, I watched that game at home on Thursday night on Sky, and Salford were just dreadful. I know St Helens are the champions. I know they're about to play South for the title of world champions. And as good as they were, I've seen enough Wakefield teams over the years where you think those players aren't giving it all, and there were times in that game, and it's hard for me to say because I'm not a player, I'm just someone who sits in a stand, there were times when you thought in that game they've given up. A lot of those points towards the end from Saints, you thought, now they don't fancy this one, Salford. It's how they can turn that around. Has Dr. Kukash put together a team of mercenaries? I'm saying difficult words here because, you know.
Well, Richard, I'll ask you the question like I meant to Phil. Should Yestin Harris change the structure of how they're playing? Because quite clearly it's not working. He's trying the Wigan structure, it's not working.
Is that the only structure he knows would be the worry? Or a structure, again, it was mentioned by Phil, the players he's brought in are Wigan, ex-Wigan players. I don't want to use the word rejects because that's, again, too harsh a word, but they're players who weren't deemed good enough for Wigan. Does that mean they're good enough to do that same style at Salford? Obviously, the answer at the moment is no. We all hope they can turn it around because it'll be good to have a strong team close to Manchester, but for some reason, whatever money Dr. Kukas is spending, whoever's advising him to spend that money on those players, it isn't working at the moment. You'd hope they can turn it around, but is Yestin Harris as a coach experienced enough to do that, or to change his mind? Is he too stubborn to change his mind?
Did you say that every minute didn't matter then? Did I hear you say to the Salford player?
It may have done. It matters to us, because that's the Radio Yorkshire Rugby League promise, but maybe some of those late minutes didn't matter to some of the Salford players. Maybe they haven't bought into it yet.
Well, you got a bit of a telling off for getting the Hunslet colours wrong before. Well, we've not had any death threats on Twitter yet.
I've googled it. I know how to spell Myrtle now, so I'm okay.
Okay, you've got some team news, I understand.
Teams are out here. We're just coming up to kickoff. We've got the players warming up at the moment. Featherston in the huddle. They go Hitchcocks, Sharp, Chapel, Hardman, Blackmore, Sykes, who of course knows this ground very well, Irwin, Baldwinson, Ellis, Wood, Lockwood, Foster and Spears. A bench of Marginet, the French trialist, Brucey, Bostock and James. And Hunslet go Watson, Barnett, Luke Briscoe, who's just signed for the season from Leeds. Morn, Finnegan, Kane, Brown, Houston, Lee, Haley, Lyons, Casey and Mackay, Brennan, Mulhern, Grimshaw and Cosgrove on the bench. A lot of people tipping Hunslet to finish bottom of the pile this season, so they want to get off to a good start here. And I guess, you know, we talk about home advantage sometimes being a factor. It's a neutral venue tonight. Of course, there are plenty of Fev fans here, but it's hardly the hardest ground in the world for those armies of fans in Myrtle and Flame, to make the short trip down on the 110 bus from Hunslet to Wakefield. So plenty of support for the away side today. It should be a nice atmosphere. The ground is still starting to fill up. Plenty of Fev fans just arriving. So I think we're going to have, at least, I always hate trying to guess ground attendances because you're never sure exactly where everyone's hiding. But there's going to be at least over four figures, maybe 2,000 here, maybe more tonight, I hope.
Okay, good stuff. We'll keep coming back to you with further updates. If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, you can do @RLonRY. I put a tweet out saying that Scotty said Tommy Lee's been a hooker all his career, but not a good one. Graham Watson agrees with you. He's totally correct.
Thanks.
You see, I think that there's an interesting thing about Tommy Lee, though, because Tommy Lee, in about 2004-05, was touted as the best young halfback from Hull, but he was never really given a chance to develop as a halfback. I don't know whether he would have been a good one, but we perennially have said Hull has not produced halfbacks. They had one at academy level who we were told when we went over there was the next big thing and was never given a chance.
OK, you mentioned the fact that, you know, then Rangi Chase offered have got some players that can play rugby. Richard has been on Twitter and says Widnes Vikings were like watching paint dry Friday, got a big letdown. They've got some exciting players, but they just didn't play any rugby.
Well, at times that's the way teams are, and I was there myself, and so was Phil. And Leeds, realistically, for the first hour wasn't entertaining. It was just we'll be patient, we'll grind them out, and we won't realistically, you know, ask too many questions in attack with the ball and ball movement. But then once Leeds decided that, yeah, this Widnes side, they're getting a little bit tired, then they moved the ball a little bit wide, and then off you went. You know, the pace, what they've got, the class they've got in the three quarters on the wings, and Hardacre coming from full back, it was just a matter of the skill, the pace, and letting the ball do the work where Leeds scored, what, 32 on support in the second half. But yeah, Widnes at times, well, they're coming just to maybe keep the score down. They didn't really ask a lot of questions, but you've got to ask the coaches why they don't let players express themselves more, maybe on two accounts from a point of view, early in the tackle count, and also two, why wait until 60, 65, 70 minutes before you start throwing the ball about? It's the coach's philosophy nowadays where it seems to be safety first.
No, it's erosion. I think it's taking the sting out of the opposition. If you look at Leeds' first two games this season, in the second half, they've conceded one try and scored 10. And I think you look back to the great Wigan teams, which I'm certainly not comparing this Leeds team to at the moment, but the great team spent an hour wearing down the opposition, allowing them to throw whatever they had at them. It was a bit of a rainy night. It wasn't easy to keep possession. Widnes were without Kevin Brown, so they were always going to play a kind of a conservative style. And Leeds wore them down.
Very similar last year, same kind of thing. It was a level for large part. There was not a lot in it, was there, yeah, heading lane, and then Leeds blew them away in the last 20 minutes.
But I think there is something different about Leeds this year, and that partly comes from Adam Cuthbertson in the middle, who's giving them a different dimension. But I also think Kevin Sinfield is playing as a standoff in these first two games, not as a loose forward who happens to be in the standoff position. Because he's now standing one away, Cuthbertson's doing his magic. A lot of the really good stuff in that last 20 minutes revolved around Kevin Sinfield, and was seen by the fact that he picked up the last try. Not only did he create it, but he supported it and scored it as well. It's a different looking Leeds team, and I think that's why they left Rob Burrow out. Yes, it was partly to give Liam Sutcliffe a run, but they've got potentially five pivots and they can only play four of them, and while you've got that strength in depth and no injuries, it's going to make them a very exciting team and a lot of competition for places.
Yeah, you're a Cuthbertson fan already, Gary, I think, aren't you?
Huge fan. Very impressed when they played Wakefield on Boxing Day, and nothing changed my mind, you know. And the good thing about it, I think it's a 4-year deal he's signed for, isn't it? And he's not an Australian, he's coming over here for a holiday and, you know, just enjoy himself. Yeah, I'm really impressed. And as Phil says, he's brought a bit of a new dimension because he's been allowed to express himself in a point of view where he wants to pass the ball. And, well, who better support players, as you would say, in Robbie Burrow and Danny Maguire? Yeah, you've huge fan of Cuthbertson, and yeah, he's going to be a huge difference for the Rhinos if they're going to lift some silverware this year.
I think full credit to the coaching staff as well, because they had told him to play what he sees, and it's what you were saying earlier.
That's what it's all about.
And the fact that that instruction has gone out and Leeds are moving the ball a bit more, I think that makes them a more dangerous team.
It's quite clear. If that's what he wants to do, and that's what he's been told, because I know when I went to Balmain in 85, Frank Stanton just said to me, he said, listen, you're here to score us tries, you've got a free roll. It was music to my ears. You know, I didn't have to do much defending because he put Wayne Pearce out on the right-hand side, so when any defending needs to be doing, he was in the right place. So from my point of view, I finished up the top try scorer for the two season under Frank Stanton, and Wayne Pearce's tackle count went from, I think, 26 a game to 72. But anyway, that wasn't my problem.
No, you were doing what you were told.
Exactly.
Makes a change.
You know, but as I say, again, we're talking about the quality of an individual player who could do that. I'm just surprised because, again, we mentioned yesterday, Harris, what a quality individual player he was. Mm-hmm. Graham Murray moved him from the standoff role to the fullback, which gives him a bit more time, a bit more freedom. And as I say, I just cannot understand why the shackles are on Rangi Chase. I can't.
OK, fair enough. We asked a question earlier on Twitter, at RL on RY, if you want to get in touch. Wigan Rugby Fans has been on, said Kukash has spent too much time talking up his team and the fans have believed him. None of that Salford team would get in a Wigan or a St Helens team. Matt, is that true?
I'm trying to think who would get into any of the other side. Kevin Lockfit would probably get into another side.
Dobson would, wouldn't
he? Dobson would, yeah.
I mean, again, he's got some exciting players, but they're unproven. You look at Mason, Kate and Brown, who for half a season in the team that was at the bottom of the division looked a quality player. This week, he looked out of his depth. That's not to say he's not a talented player, but I'm not sure they've quite got that balance right. You know, the problem is they've invested in guys like Dobson and Locke, and they've not delivered at the moment. Hock, obviously, we know can get frustrated. He then becomes a liability. He's been charged with two offences today.
He's going to be out, isn't he?
So, you know, you've lost a game by 50 points. You're going to lose your star forward, who is the kind of guy you'd want to let the shackles off. He's not going to be there for, what, three, four games again?
He's been charged C&B, hasn't he? So
you're looking at a period without him at a time when you desperately need him. And I think that is the issue, that under a salary cap sport, if you're going to change your team every year, you're going to have to buy across the board rather than out-and-out quality.
Well, I'll tell you what then. Let's just say, for instance, Salford keep playing to the structure what they are playing. Where do you think they'll finish up this season then? I think they'll finish bottom. I do, honestly. Doesn't matter what class of players or calibre, I think they'll finish bottom, because quite clearly the players are just not enjoying that sort of style of play. I do.
I'm not sure he'll allow it to go along that long enough if it looks like they're going to finish bottom. I think they are in that group that look like they're going to be playing in the middle eight, and then that will put tremendous pressure on them.
Okay, good stuff. Keep your tweets coming in at RL on RY. We're awaiting the FA Cup draw in the studio as well. Who will Bradford City get our Yorkshire representative in the last eight? We're going to talk Wakefield Trinity Wildcats next, Rich.
Go the Wildcats! Go the Wildcats!
Great start to the season, Rich.
Yeah, fantastic start. Two weeks from two, can't do any better, obviously. Good stuff. I mean, I haven't seen any of the games because I've been in the studio for the last two Sundays, as I will be all season, but listening to the commentaries, listening to the reports, everything sounds like the spirit's there. Even if they hadn't come back against Castleford, they look like they're together as a team. And certainly yesterday, having seen a few of the tries on the highlights, they look like they played some very good rugby league against Hull KR. So not only are they together as a team, they're starting to play some good rugby, which over coaches in the past, they haven't done at Bellevue.
No, it's a bit windy there at Bellevue tonight.
It is slightly cold and windy, but not as cold as at Wigan. I have to point that out. So Yorkshire won Lancashire nil.
And they've signed Joe Arundel, which again is, you know, it's good backup in the squad. I don't think he'll walk into the team at the moment, but he's another potentially quality individual to be able to call on. Do you get a sense that Wakefield are this year's Castleford, that they've gone into the season with everybody fit, they've had a good pre-season, everybody knows their role, they've got a couple of halves that are playing with a little bit of confidence, and a hooker in Godinet that can turn a game when he comes on, and actually if they could have picked a fixture list, they probably would have picked along the lines of the first two fixtures that they've had, because they've been playing a local derby where there is no form on the board, and then Hull KR, who are a team that they would expect to challenge around their place in the table, that it's actually been almost the perfect start for Wakefield on every front.
I think I started when we were looking ahead to 2015 thinking maybe Wakefield could sneak into the top eight, then everyone put me off and I was thinking, oh, maybe ninth or tenth, but as we said before, it doesn't matter where you're finishing that bottom four because the points are all wiped out. But I think there's a general optimism ahead of this season. I personally, as a fan, I'd hope for a decent cup run. That's one thing that Wakefield have missed out for a long, long time, and even when they did get to the semi-final against Hull in 2008, I think that was the first Super League team they played on the way there. So it's never been a competition they've done well in since getting into Super League in 1999. I think there's generally just a feel-good factor around the club since Michael Carter took over, and we shouldn't underestimate the work Kath Hetherington did as well, bringing in, you know, if you bring in someone who is an experienced administrator at a rugby league club, something that has been surely missing at this club for a long, long time. I think once off the field's done, on the field started to get sorted, the signing of Joe Rundell is the perfect signing for Wakefield. A young player who's hungry for success and can add something to the squad in an area where it was missing. It was said pre-season by James Webster, centres was probably the area where if injuries hit, they'd be in trouble. So they've sorted that out early in the season. It's a good move for all parties in that one, you'd think.
Yeah, it was full of promise, wasn't it, Castleford? Made the move to Hull, Matt. It's never quite worked for him, has it, there?
No, and he had a spell on loan at the Bradford Bulls last year, which I don't think's helped him being in a losing side for most weeks. It's not helped his development in any way or fashion. It was between Wakefield or Cass in the trade papers this morning with where Joe was going to turn up. So I'm and he never really got a chance at Hull. When he did get a chance at Hull, he did have some good games, I've been told that. And Wakefield will be good for him, but he's got to try and push Dean Collis out of the side, and Dean Collis was magnificent down that right hand side yesterday. Reece Lynn didn't really do a lot wrong. He set up a couple of tries for Chris Riley, so he's going to have his work cut out to get into the starting side as well.
He is, but it adds competition. We saw Phil Castleford did this last year, didn't they? They brought the likes of Jewett in and Carvell as they went through the season, and it, you know, they've admitted they're going with a small squad. So this has got to be a welcome addition, hasn't it?
It is. My only worry for Wakefield, and it's the same with all bar maybe the top two or three sides, is that their halves are so important to them. But if they get an injury to a Tim Smith or Jacob Miller, what is the cover? And Tim Smith, you could see from the highlights of the tries that were scored yesterday that things were working for him. When things are working, he's a confidence player, and he was setting up Danny Kermond, he was setting up Jacob Miller, and he looked like he was really, really enjoying himself. Now, while Tim Smith's enjoying himself, he's a danger to every other team in the league. But will he enjoy himself every week? Will he come up against stiffer defences that will shut him down than Hull KR? Will he be able to go through the season without missing a few games? And what will Wakefield do? What are their options? Godinet can play seven if he has to, with McShane at hooker. But my only worry for teams like Wakefield is the depth of squad. Arundel will help with that. But I guess every season there is a team that makes a start that is above and beyond what you'd have thought, and one thing that breeds is confidence and belief. And last year it was Castleford. Every week we were saying, well, the bubble's going to burst, but they kept everybody fit, they kept all of their star names on the field, and how Castleford this year could do with a couple of those star names, because they would have been the difference between winning and losing. And Wakefield, if they get on a roll, will be just playing with a joie de vivre which makes them dangerous, and they could belie everybody's expectations of finishing bottom.
And since James Webster's come in, they've won 8 from 14 under James Webster. He's certainly turned the club round, and he's doing a really good job for the Wildcats.
They're doing all right, the Wildcats.
Doing very well. Yeah. They're doing very well. As I say, the two things what they've got, you know, they've got the confidence there now, and also to a good team spirit. And James Webster's letting them express himself in the way that they want to do. And Tim Smith, we know that quality players. Jacob Miller, as we all know the problems and how he performed over the number side wasn't very good. But they're playing as a team, they've got that spirit, they're enjoying themselves, they'll be going into training with a smile on their face. And yeah, full credit to the coach there for, when you look at the great coaching job, the question I would say is it's great man management, because the players are really enjoying themselves, and it's full credit to them.
We saw Castleford last year, Phil, on the back of some very good team spirit, achieve a fantastic season. Wakey have started that way. People are asking, Salford have got all these players but they ain't got any spirit, or that's how it seems to an outsider looking in. That's a problem, isn't it, for Salford at the minute?
Yes, I think so. Again, if you keep moving people on and bringing people in, that's exactly what you don't get. And again, I think Castleford are still finding their feet this year, partly because through no fault of their own, they've had to revise the squad this year. And I know that Gary thinks likewise, that if Darrell Clark was still at Castleford, then they would have probably won both of their games this year. Minus 3 points in two games is nothing to be worried about. But last year they started off that they would have won both of those two games with the squad that they've got.
Your Yorkshire Sports Station. We are Radio Yorkshire.
Jacob Miller, Scoey, fantastic effort from him. The hat trick yesterday. Phil made reference to Tommy Lee earlier not getting a chance at LFC. Jacob Miller's another one, isn't he? I'd seen him a couple of times and thought there's potential there, but unless you get a go, you can never fulfil potential, can you?
I'll buy into that, but quite clearly at Hull, he couldn't handle the pressure. You know, Hull, the club is huge, and a lot was put on his shoulders, and quite clearly he just handled the pressure there. Did he get a lot of help from Rankin at the side of him? Not really, because I don't really think he's up to much, to be honest with you. And we just proved with the signings of Leon Price and Mark Snead. Okay, he may not have been helped. He had a huge reputation in Australia. I think the West Tiger, he came from there. So at the end of the day, he didn't handle the pressure, and quite clearly it didn't work out. But he's seen it at Wakefield. The expectations may not be as high. The pressure's not as high because he's got an experienced half-back in him in Tim Smith, taking a lot of pressure there. And as I said to Matt before the game yesterday, quite clearly with half-back roles, you've got to identify your role there. Tim Smith is the main organiser, and what Jacob Miller did yesterday, he was a support player, and it worked like a dream.
I just like the balance of the Wakefield squad at the moment, because they can actually have, they've got options off the bench, and that's what you want. So, you know, you've got your starting props of Daniel Smith, who's got great potential, Nick Scruton, but then you can bring Scott Anderson on. So you've got, you know, something that you can change there. You've got your two hookers. We were talking about Salford and Hull KR. Maybe they need an out-and-out hooker. Well, you know, Paul McShane starts and then Peter Godinet comes on and splits you apart. And then your X-factor is Ali Lawatiti, who, you know, very cleverly they realise he's not going to play 80 minutes anymore, but what he can do in 20, you know, can tear teams apart. There actually is a really good balance in that Wakefield squad if they can stay fit. But once you put confidence into that mix, it makes a hell of a difference.
It does. Matt, you watched Miller yesterday. Impressed with him?
Yeah, very impressed with Jacob Miller yesterday. Took his three opportunities well. And as Scoey mentioned, he's got the support play. Tim's doing all the organising and Miller's just lurking there on the fringes, and he's in the right place at the right time. Another Wakefield player who really impressed me yesterday was Peter Godinet when he came off the bench, as you've mentioned. Macca doing the hard yakka in the first 20 minutes, and then the gaps are there for Godinet, and he's just exposing it.
And you've got pace with Craig Hall at fullback as well, so you're looking in the spine of the team. And actually, Wakefield have got players now that would get into other Super League teams, whereas before, perhaps they haven't. And again, I think, you know, must credit the way Michael Carter's gone on around his recruitment, but also the advice he's had from people like Kath Etherington as to who to sign. There has been a turnover of players from taking over the club to where they are now. And I know that they're very, very conscious of crowd, they're very conscious of facility. They keep playing like this, the difference between Wakefield and Salford is the fans will come back, that they will start to believe what the chairman says because they can see it on the field, which isn't necessarily winning every week. It's actually having a team that you want to go and support. Salford, you keep being promised what's going to happen. If you don't deliver, you then can't complain about the crowd size, because why would people turn up?
Yeah, Rich, a lot of people have complained about things that have been said and done at Wakefield in recent years. We know through speaking to Michael Carter, they've got a man now that they can trust and get behind, and all of a sudden he's been given a bit of time and he's starting to get things right with James Webster on the pitch. He said James Webster, he was going to recruit, try and get quality rather than quantity. We know they're open to injuries, every club in Super League is, but you look at that team, mate, they've got a good side.
I would say this, and we've said it somewhere else about another club not too far away, supporters should be careful what they wish for, because they just might get it, and they did in the past. The wool is not being pulled over anyone's eyes now at Wakefield. We should question everything. Every supporter should question everything a club comes out with, just to make sure that everything is correct. But at the moment at Wakefield, you get that feeling that everything you're told from upper management is what is actually going on, and you didn't have that feeling necessarily in the past. And the fact that they put together the team off the field, the team on the field's going great guns as well, you just get that positive feeling. If Wakefield miss out on the top eight, so be it. You still think that going into that playoffs, if the spirit is still there, and we come to the club and interview the players and the coaches week in, week out throughout the season, and even when they're on that bad run of form last year, players were telling us, you know, the spirit is still there, we still believe we can get out of the mire or whatever, and you believe that even more when they start to perform on the field. And the crucial signing was Tim Smith. You know, Gary's mentioned it earlier, everyone's mentioned it, when he came into the Wildcats last year, and it was something that Richard Agar didn't have. He and James Webster together have been a catalyst that brought Wakefield that great form towards the end of the season, and it's gone on into this season as well. So it's a positive feeling around Bellevue, which is something that, you know, I've been watching this club about 23 years now, and it's very rare you do get that positive feeling.
I'll just follow on from that, Mark, as well. And as I say, I've just borrowed your pen off here, and quite clearly, you know, halfbacks at every club, they're going to be the match winners. They're going to be, and I say, Richard, whether you agree, and I'm sure a lot of people do, you know, Tim Smith stays fit, Tim Smith stays on form, same as Jacob Miller, then, yeah, the Wildcats have a chance for the top eight. But when you look and go through each team in Super League, and what I've done here, Wigan have got England halfbacks, Leeds have got English, Saints have got Australians, Warrington have got English, Hull have got English, Hull KR, Wakefield have got Aussies, Widnes have got English, Salford, well, an Aussie and a Kiwi, the Catalans overseas, Cass have got 1-1, and the Giants England. So the emphasis quite clearly, I know people may disagree, where your forwards do this and your forwards do that, if halfbacks stay fit and halfbacks stay confident, then they are the players who make sure winning or losing.
Okay, yeah. We've had a few tweets coming in, by the way. Aaron from Wigan has said, wait till the injuries hit. I mean, that could happen to anyone, couldn't it, to be honest? And we've also had a tweet in from Michael, who's a London Scholars fan. He says he's enjoying the show and he's enjoying the backdrop of Featherstone against Hunslet, so you may as well give us an update, Rich.
Well, Michael, you should be with us on Sunday as well, because we've got live championship action. Our first championship commentary of the season comes live from Doncaster this Sunday, so tune in from 2 for that. Featherstone have taken the lead, all that pressure from Hunslet, and a penalty they gave away midfield gave Featherstone great field position, and an overlap on this right hand side. Ian Hardman going in, and Paul Sykes adding the extras. We've had, we've got 16 minutes left of the first half. 6-0 to Featherstone Rovers.
Okay, good stuff. Keep us up to date as the points go in here on Radio Yorkshire. I haven't told Rich, actually.
No, but I will be second, Mark.
I just want to jump in. Sorry. Best not tell him, because he might be listening. We've got a double header on Sunday, because we're doing Sheffield's game as well.
That's all right,
so
that's good.
Might be getting some overtime, Rich, but I'm not sure there's any money in the budget.
To be honest, Mark, I don't get paid any more for
just
there
to the Wigan fan, you know, and he mentioned injuries. Well, I'll reply to that to the Wigan fan quite clearly. If Sean Loughlin gets injured, and if Sean Loughlin is out for a long time, I'll tell you what, Wigan won't be winning anything, because they are at times really reliable on Loughlin and a one-man team.
Just going back to Wakefield, one other thing we haven't said is that the presence of Tim Smith has again brought out the best of Danny Kerman, because the two play off each other. They know the angles of runs.
Well, the try he scored yesterday was sensational, wasn't it, Matt? It was.
And I just think Kerman is a different player when he's got a guy who he trusts on his inside to put him into space, and we know he is a quality player. So I think, again, just by bringing Tim Smith in on a permanent basis, you've not really bought one player, you've actually bought the best out of another one as well.
Okay, good stuff. You can get in touch with us at RL on RY. I think Dan's having an argument with a Cass fan about the new stadium. He wants it, the other fella doesn't. And he said, why don't you want the new stadium? I can't understand it, why you wouldn't want a new stadium for the Tigers.
It's not whether you'd want it or not. It's not even up for debate. Sport is now business. And when I was growing up, and obviously Gary will tell you from playing at the places, the two stadiums I thought would never, ever change.
No, it's not.
Were the Boulevard and Warrington, you know, Wilderspool. The old Wilderspool, the zoo and the Boulevard were the two most intimidating places any team could go. And if you'd have told me that as I grew up those two stadiums would cease to exist, but the clubs would get stronger, then, you know, that's why sport is business. You need to generate income. At the moment, Castleford can't even hold weddings at Weldon Road to generate income.
Nobody wants to get married in Cass, that's why.
Oh, we're moving on.
Don't tell my Karen.
But if they open a facility whereby, and when you look at the distributions from Sky these days, that should, to all intents and purposes, pay for your playing squad. So any money you make from the commercial side is the club's money, for, you know, and that gives you the base from which you can invest in juniors. You can, you can build a business that is sustainable. You're not reliant on handouts. You can only do that when you've got a stadium that can operate 24/7, 365 days a year, and do things other than the rugby side. They can't do any of
in
that.
In fairness to Cass, they have invested in their junior. That's probably what's kept them going, isn't it? Recently, at the likes of Darrell Clark
and sold virtually everyone.
Well, yeah, I get your point on that.
Darrell Clark was sold a year before he actually moved, on the basis of the fact that that sale kept the club going. Mm. You know, Joe Westerman left at the wrong time for his career development, and in some respects probably Joe Arundel did as well, but Cass couldn't hold on to their best players that they'd produced, and that's a travesty. And if, you know, for Darrell Powell to do the job that everybody thinks he can do, then he needs to keep his squad together and not rebuild it every
Jordan
year.
Jordan Thompson's another one as well. He's just signed a new contract at Hull, hasn't he?
So, you know, wherever you look, the best youngsters they're bringing through are still being poached. If they had their own stadium, the ability to protect what they nurture, then it would benefit everybody. And of course, fans are not going to go to stadia where there aren't state-of-the-art facilities. You're not going to pay £20 to stand out in the rain anymore.
And the proposed location of the stadium as well is absolutely fantastic. It's right next to the motorway, it's across the road from Escape, and everything there is there, the outlet village. It's a perfect location.
It opens up sponsorship opportunities with the companies around there, which are bigger than the opportunities they've got at the moment.
Your Yorkshire Sports Station. We are Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, welcome back to Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. We're live at the Rapid Solicitor Stadium. Richard Shawright, give us an update.
Well, I think you've just come up with what we should call the programme. I think that works well, Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire. Still 6-0 to Featherstone. Hunslet should have levelled things up on 25. Jimmy Watson, the full-back, knocked on over the line under pressure from three Featherstone tacklers. Featherstone had just had the ball over the line, but the kick was the man from the kick was ruled to be offside. So Hunslet back in possession. They got into the Featherstone half. They knocked on. Fev have the ball back from the scrum. 8 to go before the break. It's Featherstone 6, Hunslet 0.
Cheers, Richard. We'll move on now. We'll start talking some of our other teams. We'll discuss the performance of Hull FC. You mentioned it briefly, Matt. You were there on Friday night, being 7-6. I mean, tell us about the game. What was it like?
It was very intense. It was more like a playoff game at times, the way that the forwards were bashing into each other. Ashton Sims and Chris Hill leading the way for Warrington. But Hull were resolute and stood up against a very strong Warrington side. Warrington lost Stephen Ratchford early in the piece within the first 10 minutes, which forced them into reshuffling. Tony Smith had to go with three rotations. They ended up trying Kevin Penny at fullback. They ended up trying Gary Wheeler at fullback. They had to settle on Gareth O'Brien at fullback. And it did take them a little bit of time to get a reshuffle in, but Hull stood up to the task, and attacking wise was probably their downfall. They didn't look like they were going to score in the first half on Friday night, and the only time they did score was from a kick. So Hull maybe still have to try and get the combinations and attack right with Sneed and Price, but Mickey Payer and Liam Watts up front. Dean Adley came in for Gareth Ellis on Friday night, played down the same channel as Ellis does on that left hand side, and he was absolutely magnificent for Hull FC. Lynham and Steve Michaels on debut had a good solid game for Hull as well.
Mark Minicello was getting a lot of good press as well.
Yeah, Mark Minicello was by far and away the man of the match for Hull on Friday night. He was absolutely outstanding. Both second rows were good on Friday night, and Hull, if they can get the attack to click, they'll be a dangerous side, because the defensive side's there, 3.5 points a game. There's no better side in the competition at the moment. They just need to get that attacking side going, and they could very well easily make the eight.
Okay, Gary, your thoughts on your former team?
Yeah, Hull will make the eight. You know, for mine, because against the forwards, I don't have an issue there. But again, the situation, and as we all know, it's there for everybody to see. It's the consistency with the halfbacks, and as Matt's hit on there, the combination may not have worked there on Friday night. That may take a little bit of time, but it needs to be quicker rather than later, to be honest with you, because so the pressure's on them too, as we mentioned with Jake and Miller and that ranking and what before them. The pressure really is on Price and Sneed. Leon, it all depends on him with his consistency. If he wants to play well week in and week out, he still can produce the goods. And Sneed, well, at times last year when Castleford, when the question was asked, he couldn't handle the pressure. So it's all about himself handling the pressure. But if them two can get the combination working well, and if they can get that consistency in performance, I have no doubts whatsoever that Hull will finish in the eight.
And they were missing Sete Martasar on Friday, and obviously in the first game against Huddersfield and all their pre-season games, he was the guy that they were talking about. So a fair bit of strike missing there. And again, we talked about squads. Sometimes you just need to look at the guys that aren't there to decide how a team has played. And with the greatest respect to Richard Whiting and Kirk Yeaman, they're not there for their pace. So I think if you add in that element of maybe a Sarr in the centre, or you move Steve Michaels into the centre, then I think you've probably got something you can build on there attack-wise.
I mean, Richard Whiting on Friday night was typical Richard Whiting. He started in the centre, ended up moving to fullback when Jamie Scholl went off at half-time. And we've been talking about strength in depth earlier in the first hour. And you look at Hull, so they were missing Sarr, Talanoa and Ellis out of the run-on side. They had Jordan Rankin, Ayafeta Paliasina and Stuart Howarth out on dual reg at Doncaster. So Hull are one of these clubs who have got a good depth of squad.
I just like the juniors they're producing as well. Yeah. And the important thing for a club like Hull, probably even this year, is not actually whether they make the eight or not. It's the fact that they can bring on kids like Jordan Abdul, and they can give them game time. And I think that is where their future lies.
I mean, you could look at the Hull FC Academy side from weekend. You've got Jordan Abdul, who's played first team, Callum Lancaster, Jack Logan, Harry Tyson-Wilson, and Bobby Tyson-Wilson got some time in pre-season with the first team as well. And there's the young fullback whose name escapes me at the moment, Curtis Norton. He's got injured at the moment. They have got some good kids coming through at Hull as well.
Scoey, Hull FC, you're confident that they make the eight. You're not so confident about Hull Kingston Rovers.
No, I think they've got loads of problems, OK. The halfbacks, from a point of view, is it the right combination? They seem to be both when we're doing the same thing from an organisation point of view, but how many points are they leaking? You know, defensively, they're all over the shop. And as I say, well, we heard that interview from Chris Chester, what was it now?
A couple of weeks ago at Warrington,
and you know, and the leaking in points, what, 40 against the Rhinos, then what, 44 yesterday. So, attacking wise, at times they're okay, but usually massive problems defensive work.
Your Yorkshire Sports Station. We are Radio Yorkshire.
Gary and Chris Chester saying we're a long way off defensively. I mean, it raises the question, what have they been doing in pre-season?
Well, quite clearly, it was there, Mark. It was there 3 weeks ago after that interview against Warrington, and quite clearly, and his words stick in my mind now. Certainly, when he said, "Well, today's performance, you know, it was all about, you know, well, we didn't really turn up, and they weren't for any points." Well, quite clearly, there's been two games now, and there's been 4 points on the offering, and quite clear that they haven't been good enough. And for a coach to be saying we're miles away, it's very, very. Well, mind-blowing, really, and I'm sure the fans who turned up to watch them against the Rhinos last week, and certainly the many people, because Matt was there yesterday, and there's a huge following from Rovers, and I'm sure they're disappointed to hear them comments as well, because, as you've just put the question to, what have they been doing in pre-season?
When we came in for our pre-season preview, Phil, you laughed or chuckled at the fact that I was looking at the first five games. Now, Wigan, Warrington, Catalan, the next three for Hull KR. Worrying times, I would say.
There's no win there.
The only reason I didn't laugh, I just said if every minute matters in every game, it shouldn't matter who you're playing. It should be as difficult from week to week. I don't think Hull KR have got a problem scoring points. They've got some really exciting players. I mean, you know, we know that Albert Kelly can be a bit in and out, but when he's in, he's very, very in. And Ken Cio is a fine strike player. Mantellato has not got the credit he deserves. A great goal kicker,
not missed this season.
No, and again has come from a very good environment at the Roosters. So I don't think the issue is probably in the backs. And they brought a lot of people in the forwards. It just doesn't seem to be working for them. They ran out of steam against Leeds. Now, 60 minutes, they'd given everything. They'd scored 30 points, but they had nothing left to give. And they seem to have carried that into the game at Wakefield. They're not finishing strongly in games, and that would be a worry, I think, that if you run out of steam two games into the season, you do have to say, you know, has the pre-season preparation been right, even given the fact that they bought 13 players in?
I mean, at the end of the day, Chris Chester wasn't scared to swing the axe after the defeat against Leeds. Kieran Dixon didn't make it. Chris Wellham was dropped after his performance the week before, and he's trying different things. And you Ben Kakane at fullback played at hooker last week, and it's not exactly the two same roles, are they? But I mean, you can get away with your fullback playing in a dummy half role, which we saw Lee Smith do a few years ago at Leeds, but they come two completely different positions.
But quite clearly here, fellas, right? And just say, for instance, You two guys are Hull KR fans, and you're hearing that from Chris Chester. What would you be thinking as fans? You know, you'd be asking the same question. Well, what have they been doing since the first week in November?
I mean,
you know,
we talked a lot about how pivotal was it going to be, literally and metaphorically, losing the likes of Josh Hodgson and Travis Burns, and we said at the time that yes, it's all right bringing players in and moving them around, but they're the key positions. That, you know, that you've got to have guys who dictate the game, and Josh Hodgson isn't irreplaceable, but he hasn't been replaced. You know, with the greatest respect to Keel Carlisle, I don't think anybody up to this point in his career has thought he's going to be a hooker. And John Buzebda from Toulouse,
I think he went well yesterday.
He might be a good player, but he's unproven at that level. It's putting a hell of a lot of pressure on him to come off the bench, and you know, he's not used to this intensity and this level of football. There was quite a strong rumour that they were after Sean Lunt for a while. And again, you look at a team like Hull KR, and you think if you stick a Sean Lunt in there, some of their problems go away. But the worrying aspect for me would be that they've faded out of both of their two games.
Lee, who's a Halifax fan, said Cass need a new ground. If the old franchise system would have been done properly, they would have been kicked out of Super League.
Well, I have to agree 100% with him, as I've always said.
Okay, that would have meant Wakey would have gone as well, you would imagine. Mm. And the early bird has been on, and he said, Gary Schofield's confident we make the eight. Should we be concerned? They're having a go at your tipping skills, Gary.
Well, the black and whites, well, what can I say? Even after 27 years, they're still not liking me. But anyway, yeah, as I've mentioned before, yeah, the black and whites won't have a problem and enjoy your season. The great thing about it, the game behind Lee Radford, Adam Pearson has said, well, whatever happens, Radford's keeping the job. So, you know, made up for Radford. He's got the right spirit going. And one thing for sure, he's making sure, unlike, as we mentioned at Salford, he has got the dressing room and quite clearly he's gone and playing for that shirt and gone and playing for the club. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, he's been back on actually the early bit. I presume it's a he. He said, is this Sean every Monday? He said he's really impressed. Sensible discussion and not sensationalist. You've got a new fan in Sussex, so nice to know. Thank you for that.
He's been on my timeline as well.
Why?
He's been on my personal timeline talking to my other half about weddings in Cass. Giving him 6 weeks.
That's what Mrs. Wilson wasn't happy about. She said you're gonna have to buy. My dad said you're gonna have to buy Mrs. Wilson a pint next time you're in Cass.
Well, why would I have said wrong?
Offending the great people of Castleford.
Why have we offended him?
You said who wants to get married in Cass?
No, I said, does anybody want to get married in... Does any Cass people want to get married? That's what I'm saying.
Hold on.
And I live in Cass, and I'm getting married in Huddersfield.
There you go. Take it back.
Dean has been on and said, you were right about Tommy Lee. He said, ask any Wildcats fans. But then he said, Scoey's got to be right once in his life.
Hey, listen, right, you Wildcats fans, OK, I can't wait until we're 10 games into the season. Let's see where we are. Listen, very much congratulations, but let's see where we are in 10 games' time, eh?
Easter's the time to really have a look at the table. I'm not even a fan of the tables being produced at this time of year.
OK, well, they are produced, and Wakefield are in the top four, as it stands, as are the Leeds Rhinos. Yeah. Who started the season with two wins and scoring plenty of points, Gary.
Yeah, and they're there and thereabouts. There's no two ways about that. The quality of what they've got, and then I say with Cuthbertson adding a new dimension to them. I guess, as we mentioned before the season started, the motivation is going to be their issue. Can they realistically, you know, want to perform to the highest level week in and week out? All the players can answer that question. But one thing for sure, when it comes to the pressure games, if everybody's fit, everybody's playing with confidence, and I say the big match experience have got, the Rhinos will be there and there about these. No two ways about that.
I think we forget, Phil, that was it a fortnight before Wembley? Leeds was top of the pile last year and looking pretty invincible as well at the time. Well, whatever happened. They don't go to being a bad side, do they?
Well, I think the other thing is that they're always a better team when they're being underestimated. Yeah. They've always felt that when they're out of the limelight, they're at their most dangerous. When they were fifth and written off, that's when they came into their own. Everybody this year, perhaps understandably, didn't have them. A lot of people didn't even have them making the four. So they wouldn't have been in the playoffs. And I'm not sure that they'll use that as motivation because they're too long in the tooth to do that. I just think that you look at this team and they have had the longest preparation of a Leeds team for a very, very long time. They've had all their key players in pre-season from early November. They're all fit. Which again, you know, a lot in the early season is if you can get your team out there and settled and fit, and they put into practice the principles that they've spent so long doing in pre-season, then it suddenly starts to make a lot of sense and it works. And when again, I think a brave call this week that perhaps Brian McDermott won't get credit for, bringing Liam Sutcliffe in. You know, he's trying to give the players that are in and around the squad enough game time so that they feel part of it. As he said, Liam Sutcliffe's played nearly 40 Super League games. He's not going to be going out on loan to anybody this year, so you've got to play him. That forces him to make a decision when everybody's fit as to who he leaves out. And it's a brave coach that would leave out a Rob Burrow. He's going to have exactly the same when they play Huddersfield next time out because Brett Delaney will be fit. And again, you know, it's a brave coach that's going to drop someone from that Leeds team that's performed so well. The other thing that I think is very important from a Leeds point of view is you buy And Gary will know this better than anybody else, you buy the fan support by the type of rugby that you play. And if Leeds start to play like they did in the last 20 minutes against Widnes, then the crowd were absolutely rocking, because that's what they want to see. They want to see wingers scoring tries. They want to see centres on the inside taking miracle balls. And a lot of what they created in that last 20 minutes is just the style of rugby that Leeds fans have been brought up on and will back. And they'll even be able to take the odd defeat. But if they play like that, the fans will stick with them.
Very good. Matt?
Yeah, just one more player from Leeds to mention over the weekend. It's took him 12 months to get out on the paddock.
It's a wonderful story for him,
isn't it?
I mean, and again, the story was told on Friday night. Only played 7 minutes, but the backstory is better than that 7 minutes. He went through the academy system at St Helens, got shown the door, decided to sign for Hunslet. Mainly on the basis of the fact that he wanted to be picked up by Leeds. So he travelled from Hunslet two or three times a week just to play in the Hunslet team, was Hunslet Player of the Year in 2013, was seen and picked up by Leeds in the pre-season of 2014, snapped his Achilles tendon, came back on loan at Hunslet, tore his biceps, never played a game for Leeds. He's waited until now, 20 months... But the story doesn't end there. He was warming up as the 18th man on Friday night. Kyla Luluai was sick after the warm-up, and Andy Yates, who just put on the water boys top, was suddenly told he was playing and making his debut. And again, it's stories like that that make you love this game of rugby league.
Yeah, it is indeed. He put the hard work in, and he got his reward. Someone called Tom Lee has tweeted. No, not surely not that one.
I'm leaving.
No, it can't be. At RL on RY, and he says, what have Volker been doing in pre-season? Losing 42-0 at the Well, Jones, the warning signs were there.
Well, you can't, and I say, mate, you can't kid people, can you? You know, because, you know, these supporters and they go watch these games, and, you know, we're all entitled to an opinion, and quite clearly, you know, Hull Kisser Rovers are nowhere near where they should be, and the question is, why not? You know, why not? Why are they struggling? And why are, you know, the last 10, 15 minutes of the game, when it's all been the pre-season, it's all been the hard work, and it's all been the camps where they've been, you know, why are they struggling only two games into the season? Everybody talks about it at the back end. Everybody says that there's already too many games in Super League and what have you. You know, so why are they looking so tired two games into the season? I just do not buy into it at all. And what the coach is saying, one thing for sure, it's not inspiring anybody, is it? I must say as well, though, Mark, we hunched it, and I saw the commercial manager Andy Hemingway at the Rhinos game on Friday night, and there's a nice little invite as well for myself to the Hunslet talk and the Bradford Bulls at the South Leeds Stadium. So one hospitality, nice Sunday afternoon at the South Leeds Stadium. I'm very much looking forward to it.
What did you say then, Rich?
I said that you should go, Gary, because they've been very entertaining here today. I was going to say later, if any fans are at a loose end on a Sunday and Hunslet at home, very much worth going to watch. Very entertaining side so far.
Well,
I'll
say as well, Richard, I say I'm there, and also to I'm sure everybody knows that I'm doing the hosting at Keighley Cougars, so I'm very much looking forward to the rugby league at these clubs, and looking forward to the reception I'm going to receive, I'm sure, from the different fans.
Yeah, Keighley against Newcastle, isn't it, on Sunday for you?
It is indeed, yes.
Yeah, you don't
looking forward to that. Then I'm down there the first game of the season, the 1st of March, so yeah, looking forward to meeting hopefully new friends, and hopefully they enjoy the opinion what I give.
Very good.
Do you think they will?
I think they will, mate. I think you'd be good entertainment, pal. Yeah, I think you'd be good entertainment. We like what you do on this show.
So
many others don't.
So,
we do.
So you're not saying anything about my hospitality, the Hunslet and Bulls
game?
Mate,
you're not
a bit envious of anything? No,
not at all.
Not envious of Cheshire Races?
Slightly.
I think but Richard raises an interesting point there about on a Sunday get down to a Championship game. This is another of my hobby horses. That I think we now have a window of opportunity to promote the Championship.
It's
a different competition this year, and that we've got Super League now established on a Thursday night and a Friday night. There is nothing to stop Super League being played Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Leave Sunday free for Championship fixtures. Look at the crowd at Lee yesterday, which must have been helped by the fact that there was no Super League in the North West. So Wigan fans, Warrington fans, St Helens fans, who would have thought, actually, that's a really attractive game, I'd like to be there, they had the opportunity to go.
Hasn't one championship club, is it Batley, who are letting any Super League ticket holder in for a fiver to every game?
Well, that's what you want. You know, Batley had over 800 people yesterday. I don't know what their average was last year, but I suspect that for a game against Workington, that's quite a healthy attendance. Mm. So why not have Super League take its focus Thursday, Friday, Marwan's British Bulldogs on Saturday, and then all the championship on Sunday.
Yeah, that's another job Scoy was after, wasn't it? Manager of the British Bulldogs, we'll see.
Waterboy, I think he said.
Waterboy? I'll tell you what,
you'll be the Czech Republic coach soon anyway. Now you've got a T-shirt, won't you?
Your friend Mr Crooks was the coach of Serbia for a while.
Should have stayed there.
Brian has been on. He's enjoying the show. People are talking about us now. Spread the word. Let people know we are here to talk rugby league. We're not here to make things up or be sensationalist. We say how it is, and that's what we always aim to do. So get in touch at RL on RY. Let us know where you're listening from. It's nice to know people outside Yorkshire are listening. I think we do try and give everyone a fair shout, even though we are slightly biased towards our own sides.
Well, we haven't discussed Catalan yet.
No, we haven't. Who?
Or Castleford.
Yeah.
Or Huddersfield.
Over Kate. Well, don't say Huddersfield for you, because I know you'll be on your soapbox, because you're not a big fan, are you? Let's be fair.
Well,
then we'll go again. There now. They were beaten at Wigan on Friday night. They were in control of the game up to half time. For me, they bombed too many chances. And second half, they were awful, absolutely awful.
Well, again, Mark, and as we saw at the end of last season, you know, they're okay for a certain time, but then they just go off everything, don't they? You know, and you're saying there, well, you know, for 40 minutes, let's not forget the game is for 18 minutes, isn't it? You know what I mean? And quite clearly, if the game plan, what the structure supports, but isn't working, then they've no plan B. It's as simple as that. They have no plan B whatsoever. And again, we talk about teams that a one-man team, and if Danny Brough is off form, if Danny Brough, say for instance, is out for a while, then they are going to struggle. There is no two ways about it, because quite clearly they have not got a plan B. And as we saw last year in the playoffs, Luke Robinson's not up to it with the organisation to get him around the park. So if Bruffy was injured, who would take on that role?
Phil?
I think they're lacking an enforcer, which I think makes Danny Brough's role easier. For some reason, and it's probably just an illusion, I haven't seen them live this year, but they don't seem to have as physical a pack as they've had in previous years. I know they've had a lot of overseas players, particularly Kiwis, and they've had a physical presence about them. The sort of team that you don't take liberties with. I don't get that impression that it's quite the same at Huddersfield, and if Danny Brough hasn't got that umbrella in front of him, makes it harder for him. I think also in these days of analysis that so many coaches do, and you know, there are ways that you can isolate one player if he is so key to a team. We saw it with Widnes on Friday night. If you take Kevin Brown out of that team, there is a limit to what their attacking ability will be. If you find a way of stopping Danny Brough, then too much of Huddersfield's emphasis is lost. And I think that you know, there are a lot of teams out there now that are finding ways of doing that, because he hasn't got guys in front of him who are stopping the opposition forwards getting to him.
Quite clearly, he stopped Danny Brough, he stopped the Giants, so there you go.
Well,
Craig
Hube's
a different type of forward, isn't he? I mean, we looked at Craig Hube at Castleford last year, and he was outstanding. He was almost, well, he was Adam Cuthbertson-like, wasn't he? His ability to get the ball away in pressure situations added a different dimension to Castleford last year. He's coming to do that role at Huddersfield, but he's taking the place of people who were there in a more physical role, and I think that dynamic probably hasn't settled yet.
Yeah, okay. We're going to hear from Paul Anderson in just a moment's time. The Early Bird's been back on. He said, I was impressed with his shot. He said, no Super League on a Sunday. We don't all live on the M62. He said, Thursday or Friday's awful for fans.
Well, and Saturday. You can have Saturday as well.
Okay.
But I'm just thinking the focus for the Championship.
Sunday, possibly
even Monday night. I mean, if there's a really good crowd at Wakefield tonight for Featherstone Hunslet, yes, it's half term, but we might be testing the market there. I just think the Championship deserves its own focus at the moment, and too often it's been lost. Now we've got a supposedly integrated game. We need to hear more about what's happening in the Championship, not less.
I mean, we were following the Lee Bradford game on Twitter yesterday during the commentary, and we touched on it. That game should have been on Sky at 6:30 last night. You said it, didn't you?
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, for mine, every game of rugby league should be played on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. There you go.
I think there's a case for producing a Championship programme.
There you go. With rugby league, with round everybody kicks off at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon.
I don't think the game's big enough for that.
It used to be. Sunday afternoons. Everybody plays Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and that's it. Easier for fans, and I tell you what, the crowds then would come back, because, as that Specky there is just saying, Thursday, Friday night, travelling over the M62, travelling, can't make it. On Sunday afternoons, 3 o'clock.
There used to be one game on a Friday selected for television, and then there used to be a 6:30 game on a Sunday night, going back to old winter rugby days. And everything else, as you said, was 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and there were no games being chopped and changed at the last minute, which is
something about Friday night matches. Playing under lights and having the whole of the weekend free, I think that works. Friday night works, and it also works for corporate, and let's face it, they do pay a lot of the bills.
Yeah, no, he who...
So Phil, you'll upset maybe a few fans there, because quite clearly, are you all corporate or you're working for your working man?
It's the corporate shilling that pays.
Scully, some of us have to pay to go watch rugby. We're not all like
when was the last time you paid to watch a game of rugby league?
Last season.
Where?
I don't know.
Rich,
I need you to get me out of this.
Listen, we're at Ellen Road here, we're not in Fantasy Island, alright.
Rich, are you there? Bail me out. Give me an update on Featherston Unslet.
We've had another join. It only came a couple of minutes after Featherston took the lead. Liam Mackay crossing for Hunslet. Brown again adding the extra, so they're back in front, 14 points to 12. Getting a bit fractious, bit of biff involving Paul Sykes, which is not the kind of player you think you would want getting involved in a scrap with the Hunslet men, but Hunslet in possession of the ball. We're off. Hunslet have dropped the ball. Feather have got possession inside the Hunslet 20. Great chance here for them to go back in front. It's a great game. Featherston 12, Hunslet 14.
Good stuff. I think we might be losing, Rich, to the Championship. You get all excited, didn't you, Featherston? He's been at Wakefield and he's seen great games of rugby.
And it's only because Featherston are losing, being at Wakefield. Yeah.
I'll tell you what was quite interesting on Friday night, Phil, because the company I work for, I might just tell them anyway, the Western Group in Leeds, we started doing sponsorship ourselves now at the Rhinos, and I take customers to every home game, and you're allowed to go into the long bar. So anyway, all the customers left, and I thought, well, my son's picking me up, and he said he's going to be out 10 or 15 minutes anyway. So I go to the door of the long bar, and unfortunately there's my ticket left on the table. Anyway, the gentleman said, you know, if you haven't got a ticket, you can't come in. So I said, well, the company I work for, we're doing hospitality, we're in the executive suite, you know, unfortunately I left my ticket on the table, I'm coming in for 10 or 15 minutes, if you haven't got your ticket, you can't come in. And it was one of the lead staff who just said, well, you know, this is one of our ex-players, Gary Schofield, and can you let him in?
Yeah, no, we were on the door, Marwan Kukac. Who he was?
I won't be let in the long bar because still under security there, and yeah, so I don't get everywhere for free.
No.
Don't get everywhere for free.
I'm judging by the cheer in the background, Rich. We've had more points at the Rapid Solicitors Stadium.
We have Ben Blackmore took advantage of that Hunslet spill possession, went over in the corner, tricky kick for Sykes, but with that to come, and with 26 minutes left of the second half, it is now Featherston 16, Hunslet 14. Belting game. To say the bookmakers this morning were giving Fev a 20-point handicap, it's been a lot closer than they expected, a lot closer than many would, but Hunslet, if they don't get something from this game, they'll be upset, but they have played some very good rugby league, and as I say, this is my first taste of Championship action this season, and hopefully it's not won't be my last.
Hey Rich, just a question, when was the last time Mark paired into a ground then?
I have no idea. It must have been when he wasn't with me, but I don't know when that was.
Yeah, cheers, pal.
I'm assuming it's one of those games when... I'm sure he chucked more than a few quid in a bucket at Bradford recently, so I'm probably one of those.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks for
was
that.
Was it the last game at Oddsall?
I don't know. It will have been where I went and played in, somewhere like that, yeah. Yeah. I was a fan before I started working on the radio, Scully.
How long have you been working on the radio, then?
About 6 years.
Well, there you go then, it's 6 years since you paid, isn't it?
Probably is.
Yeah. Well, why are you trying to cover up then? Just be honest.
All right,
just
6 years ago.
Just be honest to our listeners.
No.
Just be honest to our listeners.
I'm like it. I'm getting some stick here. The Early Bird says, corporate don't buy shirts or season tickets or stick around for years. It says,
Well done, the Early Bird. Yeah, Phil Kaplan, yeah, corporate. Get rugby league back on Sunday afternoons.
We will... have more. The Castleford Tigers have been wanting to know when they can hear from Steve Gill. We'll be hearing from him tomorrow. We'll put that on the podcast as well. Get Rich to put that on the podcast as well, because he's on about the new ground and the need for a new ground for the Castleford Tigers. They need a win, Scoy. They've not had a win yet this season. What's going on?
They do. And as I say, well, quite clearly, the last 15 minutes against Wakefield, they just went away from the game plan, lost all the enthusiasm. They thought the game was won. And as we all know what happened, Tim Smith, excellent last 15 minutes, and the Wildcats got there. Catalans, at times, they were in control. The Catalans came back in, and Cass came back in control a little bit. But quite simply, the composure at times seems to be missing a little bit. But the most important player they're missing, and if he was still in that side, and we all know where he is now, he's at Warrington. If Daz Clark was still in that side, then what we would be saying now is quite clearly Castleford would have two wins on the board. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, they would indeed. Matt, Cass, worried? No wins in the opening two?
I think there's a bit of concern around the town at the moment. Speaking to a couple of Cass fans this morning while I was out and about round town, and they're worried. I think they're not as expectant. They know they're not probably going to finish in the top four like they did last year, but they're highly confident at finishing in the top eight. And Ben Roberts hasn't really settled into English life yet. I think he's going to take a good 6-7 weeks to find his feet. I think the pitches might be a little bit too slow for him at the moment. But you look down the Cast team, and it's really not the team that was there last year. Jordan Tansey at fullback, Dennis Solomona. I mean,
what's up with him, Luke Dawn? Is he injured?
He's injured at the moment.
Is he?
Luke Dawn,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they lost.
I don't mind Tansey though at fullback. I think he's okay.
Lost Kurt Dixon to retirement as well. He was a big blow, goal kicker as well for the team as well. So there's that turnover of players. Obviously, Darryl Clark's irreplaceable for Castleford. Scott Moore isn't Darryl Clark, is he? Scott Moore brings all sorts of difference to the team.
I think they missed Adam Milner as well at the weekend. I think one of the ideas of, you know, Darryl Clark moving on for whatever reason was that Adam Milner would step up and take the lead hooking role, which again is a different style to the way that you play when you've got Daz Clark in your team. But I think they've uncovered somebody in Dennis Solomona. I think he could be an absolute star. He looks like a really, really good player. He's come through the Melbourne school, seems to be really well schooled. Obviously played at London all last year. We didn't see the best of him, but he could be somebody. Again, we talk about halfbacks. You know, the halfbacks run the team. They're two new halfbacks. Luke Gale is ready to step up, but he's not had that invested in him until now, that he is the lead man. So he's only played two games. He's going to get better. Ben Roberts, as we know, can be a bit in and out, often in the same 80 minutes, but he's going to need time. How many overseas players, particularly in the key pivotal positions, start off like a house on fire? They've got to build into the role. I think they've just been unlucky this year. Last year, they were under the radar. Nobody knew how to play them. Every week, they played a settled team with great players in key positions. They played in an entertaining style that suited them. They've not been able to do any of that this year so far. The fact that they've only lost games by 2 points and 1 point is nothing to be concerned about. I think just the worry that that Darryl Powell's got is just an anger, because he knows that actually they could have won both of those games.
Yeah, and I was up at a big shopping place in Glasshouten this morning, and was in the car park loading the car up, and there was two chaps going on about that video referee decision on Saturday when the Dennis Solomona try was ruled out.
Nothing wrong with it.
But it's all about interpretation of this new definition. Because it's referred as no try, so there was no evidence to say he was onside.
No, so. But the fact is that if that hadn't been a televised game, it would have been given as a no try. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I meant it.
We can't stop referees making decisions. That's what we're asking them to
exactly
do.
Right. And as I said to Matt yesterday in commentary, you know, James Roby, not was it? Is it
Tim?
The ref, Tim Roby, James Roby.
Tim,
is he becoming a referee?
Was good yesterday.
Yeah, Tim Roby was saying, yeah, he had a good game, but referees seem to referee differently when the cameras out on him. You know, they give what they see, and the onus is on them, you know, so the pressure really is on them. But quite clearly, they're getting just the basic calls wrong, aren't they? You know, and that's the frustrating thing.
But it's
and Roby has said it, refereed better when there's no cameras there, when
that's
there's no
the
video
early part
evidence.
Of the season, you know, you can do all the pre-season work that you like, but until you've got two competitive teams going up against each other, that's when you get your refereeing feet. They're not going to be at their absolute peak in week one. The other thing we've all spoken about before is they're not going to get dropped either. There's no great referees coming through. So, you know, you have a really, what is perceived to be a less than perfect game. The punishment for that is you'll get a game the following week.
Speaking, going back to referees, Jimmy Laws was scathing yesterday, wasn't he, about Joe Cobb?
What was it, six in the bin or something?
Well, surprised. It's not surprising because Joe Cobb, well, quite clearly, he's just not up to it, is he? It's as simple as that. He's not.
They've got Jamie Bloom in the ranks. Ex-player, why not give Jamie a go?
Well, we'll see.
Bring back Thierry.
No, leave him in the video referee in France.
Who's that?
Thierry Alibert.
Oh, please, leave him over the... leave him that side of the channel.
Alibert asked the question, and do Catalan have the advantage? Because they do have a video referee at their home games.
Or is it a disadvantage?
But they are using the same system, so Peter Brook was the second video referee on Saturday, so...
I don't have a problem with that try being disallowed if they couldn't find a reason to overrule.
It was a try, though, Phil. It was a try, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, but they couldn't get an angle on it, could they? So, with the guy who's made a decision on the field.
Let's just say this then, right? After 23 games into the season, and a try like that quite clearly is a try and is disallowed, and that gets somebody from 8th spot to 9th spot, I'll tell you what. Oh, what sort of problems will it cause then?
I mean, you roll the Sky coverage back about 15 years probably. They used to have the camera that was high up, like the 100-foot camera. They're going to need to bring that back because that's the only way you're going to get every bit of action on the pitch to prove these onside offsides.
But hey, here we are again talking about officials. It's a joke,
let's
isn't
not,
it?
Let's
it's a joke.
Not.
So let's forget
leave it there.
We don't need to give them any more airtime. Forget them.
That game ended 13-12 and Cass had more than one opportunity to win it. Yeah. So even though that one was ruled out, the destiny of that game was still in their own hands.
But okay. Just to quickly on that Catalan side, Catalan went in really light at that game at weekend. Louis Anderson playing at prop. I mean, and there's still Carney to come into that team. What are they going to be like when Carney gets in?
What's wrong with him anyway? What injury is it, Carney?
Calf.
Tore a calf.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, apparently. Keep your tweets coming in at RL on RY. Steve Cram, no, not that one, says great start for Wakefield. Sure, the players and coaching staff keep the fit on the ground. Top eight can be achieved. Plenty of people getting in touch tonight. It's great to hear from you all. Let us know who you support, and generally you do anyway, and where you're listening from. It's always nice to know people out there are listening. We were going to hear from Paul Anderson. I'll summarise it. He was happier than he was last week, but still knows there's a lot of work to do. Feels they're on the right track. I want to talk about the Championship. We've got to talk about that game of the day, the Leeds Centurions against the Bradford Bulls. We're running out of time, as we always do. 7,500 people, near enough Phil Kaplan. That is a tremendous effort, whoever was playing in the Championship.
And that was a massive game that a lot of people were looking forward to. And full credit to the fixture schedulers for putting the team that was so dominant in the Championship last year against one of the teams that were relegated from Super League as well. And if you're going to prove that this new system works, that was exactly the fixture to do it. And again, I'm now getting excited that this week it's Halifax against Lee. You know, we're looking at the Championship fixtures and going, actually, you know, there are some games there that I'd really, you know, Sheffield London is looking like a really interesting game. I think Bradford, from, you know, talking to Robbie Paul earlier, he was saying that it was a game they had won twice. They were 12 and up, they were 26 up. They got pulled into a battle, which is exactly what Lee wanted them to. They wanted to show them what Championship life was all about, and Bradford moved away from what had taken them to 20 points to 6. Now, in that respect, that's a very good lesson learned very early in the season, so it won't have cost them anything. I do think the same happened to London. You know, they're 26-0 up against Doncaster. Well, we know everything's all right. They were hanging on at the end, 26-22. So I think the teams that we all expect to do well because they've got full-time squads will eventually do well because they have access to more players, bigger squads, better resources. But they're gonna come under some severe pressure as they get to grips with playing in the Championship. You know, none of these Bradford players will know what it's like to play on the slope at Batley. They're not going to get 10 metres to be able to parade their skills in. They are going to get belted for virtually all of 80 minutes. This is going to be a hostile environment that they're moving into. You've got to come to terms with that, no matter how skillful you are, and that's what makes it exciting. And I think Featherstone and Hunslet tonight is a classic example of that.
It is. I'll tell you what, the game sounds very exciting. We'll get to Rich in a second. Very exciting as well at Deepdale, because Preston are in front against Manchester United. 3 minutes gone, second half. Preston 1, Man United 0. Your game sounds a real end-to-end battle, Richard Shorite. What's going on, Featherstone Hunslet?
Oh, it's fantastic stuff. We've got 16 minutes left. Still 16-14 in favour of Featherstone. Paul Sykes unable to add the extras from the sideline. Both teams have had chances. I think this is one feature about this game. You look at lower league football, perhaps, and it's a lot slower and the quality isn't there. Yes, this game is slower than a Super League game, but there's still some quality performers out there, and it looks like a game of rugby league. Hunslet have just just knocked on in the middle of the field. Well, I thought they knocked on, but the referee has decided to give Hunslet back possession. Oh no, he's given possession to Featherstone in the end. I think it's the Featherstone fans getting upset around me. That confused me. So Featherstone in possession, just starting on their own 40. 15 and a half to go. They lead 16-14.
I tell you what, the atmosphere story sounds absolutely brilliant, doesn't it?
Great. Absolutely great, isn't it? And I say that's what rugby league's all about, isn't it? You know, and close games. And as you mentioned, we Liam Bradford yesterday, but we talked about the competitiveness, certainly from a Super League point of view with the eights, and then when it comes in there. But the championship really is going to be what's the philosophy of Super League? Every minute counts. Well, I'll tell you what, it applies certainly to the championship with the star we'll have had.
Yeah, great crowd, Lee. They'll be wanting to keep that going, won't they? And try and get those. You know, they'll have attracted some new fans yesterday. I know there were a couple of thousand went from Bradford, but they'll have attracted some new fans. It'd be interesting to see if they can maintain that level of fan.
I'm sure they will, because also, as well, from a point of view, you look at the stadium, what they've got there, still mentioned, certainly from a corporate point of view, the style of rugby league that Paul Rowley has got Lee playing. Is exceptional to watch. You know, they're a very well balanced team, so there's no reason that they can't encourage new fans to come down to the Lee Sportsville is there, even and then when they go away from home to go, because they will play exactly the same way. We just saw that in the final last year against Featherstone. So yeah, without a shadow of that, Lee are doing everything right. And we just mentioned another game. Look at the way Dewsbury beat Sheffield on Friday night. You know, what an excellent game that was. Very entertaining, very physical. And as I say, the championship, that's the way that's going to be week in, week out.
And Phil's had his hair done as well in league colours.
Yeah, I saw that. Somebody sponsored it.
There you go, you see.
Would it sponsor mine?
But I don't think we've got enough, Scott. I think that's the problem.
I could grow mine back.
I could buy some.
What's your answer? I could grow mine back.
I could have a Rooney.
Just while we're in Lee, Mark, Steve Maiden's testimonial match on Thursday night down at the Sports Village.
Is this against the Lee Miners Select 11?
Yeah, the
13.
The Eastern Miners Select 13 against the Lee Centurions 13. I think it's only a fiver to get in. So that's for Steve Maiden's testimonial on Thursday night.
Excellent stuff. Let's get some more tweets in if you can at RL on RY. We interviewed Steve Gill earlier on today as part of our Last Tackle program that'll be out tomorrow. We'll put that interview out on the podcast, and we'll also put it out online later when he was talking about the new ground and an important meeting they've got with the council on Thursday. Phil, it's important they get the new ground, isn't it?
I think he's quite confident as well that he's enlisted the support of the local MPs, including Yvette Cooper, who I think is a season ticket holder at the Tigers. But he's also concerned that it's a major economic boost for the area. It's 2,000 new jobs in a part of the world where obviously that is vitally important. There's a country park attached to it, so it's more amenities for the people of Castleford and the surrounding areas. He can't see a single reason why there wouldn't be a allowed to do it. They then own their own ground, or Jack Fulton owns it, so if they want to sell that and realise the asset and pay Jack back the money that he's loaned them to keep the club going, it's a win-win for everyone. And I think it just raises the question again that if we're going to have such a good stadium in that area, if Wakefield can't get theirs off the ground, should they look at a ground share? And Steve is quite open and honest and said that it's not something he wouldn't consider or talk to them about. So it's important for that region that they have a really good stadium at Super League level with all the amenities that we've come to expect and that the public deserve and demand these days.
We're running out of time again. World Club Challenge.
Yep.
We've given the Championship a brief mention. We'll be paying more attention to that next week, because obviously two live games here on Sunday. We're at the Keep Moat for a doubleheader. Doncaster Featherstone from 2, Sheffield London from 4:15. Should be an absolute cracker.
I mean, if you're a fan, what a great afternoon that is. Two games, one after the other. What great value that is.
I went to the pre-season one that they did with Hull FC, so it was Doncaster Hull and then York Hull afterwards. It was cold, but it was a good afternoon.
Yeah, I think they just give too much start, didn't they, Doncaster to London? I think they were 26-0 down and got it back to, 26-22. Mm-hmm. So they give it a good shake. I am on after 9 if you want to stay for 5 minutes, lads. You're more than welcome. I'm here till 10 tonight, so it's up to you. But if you wanted to discuss the World Club Challenge, then the world is your oyster. If you stay in, Phil, you've got an hour. If you're not, you've got 2 minutes. Fire away.
I'm just looking forward to it. I think it's a great concept. I think it's something we can build. It's been marketed as Super League versus the NRL. It doesn't detract from the top game, which will determine who the best club side in the world is, and who wouldn't be looking forward to St Helens against South Sydney. That'll be just sensational. The other two games will be interesting to see what buy-in there is from both sides. I certainly think the Aussies that have come over are taking it seriously. Brisbane training at Harrow all this week before they come up north, and I think St George Illawarra have have a really close connection with Tony Smith, the Warrington coach, so there'll be no love lost there. I just think it's a concept that can grow, and too often in rugby league we do things for a couple of years and then ditch them. This could be four teams from each hemisphere playing in a knockout in a couple of years, possibly even playing it in Dubai or playing it in Las Vegas. I think we've got a marketable product. They've said it's our Ryder Cup, it's our European Cup in football. It just could be. I think there is some mileage in this, and really looking forward to the first one.
You're going to be watching Warrington, Matt.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it?
Yeah, very excited about it. It, as Phil said, it is a great concept. It's a chance for the people of Warrington to see the Benji Marshalls of the world. Of course, he's now wearing the red V of St George Illawarra. And it's going to be a good test to see where Warrington are as a squad. I mean, they've had two tough games. They've had two real physical games so far this season, Warrington, so they should be in good shape for it on Friday night.
Scotty, you represented your country equally as much as anyone else. You always look forward to taking on the Aussies, didn't you?
Without a doubt, and as I say, it's Super League against the NRL, and we know the dimension there with the matchups with the players, but also too, you look at the matchups with the coaches, especially, you know, from Sean Wayne against Wayne Bennett, and the young, inexperienced Kieran Cunningham against the Michael Maguire. So yeah, it's the Super League against the NRL, and for mine, it's Warrington, it's Wigan and St Helens to be crowned world champions.
Well, there you go. That is it. We've run out of time again. Another 2 hours beats us. We'll keep Rich on the line. We'll get an update and a full time, because we're going to be talking football after 9 o'clock as well. Thanks to Gary. Thanks to Phil. Thanks to Matt, as always. And thanks to you for listening. And all your tweets, keep them coming in. We love talking rugby league. It's at RL on RY. Doubleheader from the Championship Sunday. We'll see you then.
This is Super League Review on Radio Yorkshire.